This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal for March 31st, 2005, with hosts Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco. Today we'll bring you more voices from the peace rally in Augusta recently, and some news from Brooklyn, Maine, where they'll be voting on a proposed GMO, genetically modified organism, moratorium Saturday. And we'll start with a speech by Phil Warden at the rally in Augusta that marked the second anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq, weekend before last.
Thank you, Al. Next, we have Phil Warden. Phil Warden is an attorney and member of the National Lawyers Guild. He is a co-founder and attorney for the Mabel Wadsworth Women's Health Center and represented Iraq War protesters in the breakaway march from the October 26, 2002 rally. The sit-in at Senator Snow's office and the civil disobedience at the Bangor Federal Building when the war started. He has also represented the Maine Global Action Network, Let Cuba Live, the Route 1 widening civil disobedience protesters, and the recent Earth First LNG protest at the State House.
It's been my experience that people going through times of social change don't realize their own importance to history. For instance, the people that went through the civil rights movement did not, at that time, see themselves as the heroes we see them as today. When you're in the midst of a social movement, the ending isn't clear, and we're painfully aware of our own weaknesses and the terrible damage caused by the injustices we fight. Today, we gather to talk about how the war affects children and youth. I will discuss the impact on the young in Iraq, here at home, and in the global south. Despite our best efforts, despite the most unified worldwide protests ever seen, despite the condemnations of France, Germany, Russia, China, and most of the countries in the world, and despite the explicit lack of authority from the United Nations, our government attacked Iraq in what can only be called, under international law, an illegal war of aggression. Yeah. We simply do not know how this war affects Iraqi young. The most commonly accepted figure is that 100,000 civilians have died so far. Those deaths pale when we consider the vastly greater numbers of orphans, cripples, traumatized children. From shock and awe to the barbaric attack on Fallujah, our government dismisses this impact on the children as being merely collateral. And the only justification now offered for this brutality is that we're building democracy in Iraq. And Bush points to the recent elections with the same pride that LBJ pointed to the elections in South Vietnam. But we have occupied Kuwait since 1990. And have not moved that country toward democracy at all. The only change in Kuwait is that now it's a criminal offense to criticize the United States. And our children here at home are going to pay a tremendous price for this war. Under the pretense of moral values, Bush peddled a black and white moral superiority that because we are the good guys, anyone who opposes us must be evil. And now, we see what these moral values have in store for our children. They're left to pay a deficit that is in the trillions of dollars. Already, we see the cuts in education, health care, and social services for the young that this reckless spending with its tax cuts for the rich requires. But though our children will be America's first generation to be poorer than their parents, I can guarantee you that they will be flooded with plastic credit cards and given ample opportunity to consume cheap commodities in big boxes like Walmart, as though the grand culmination of all civilization is conspicuous consumption, debt, and always a feeling of emptiness. While the generation that came before mine sacrificed for the future, now we simply sacrifice the future. And what if... And what about the young and the rest of the world? Samir Amin calculates that the World Trade Organization's policy on agriculture will uproot over 2 billion third world people into shanty towns on the edges of gigantic urban megatropolises. And we all know what the future holds for these billions of children. They are the wretched of the earth. And though all this be true, the horror our children face remains unsaid, for they may not have a future at all. The American empire now stands naked, challenging the whole world. History tells us that no empire lasts forever. But with its nuclear weapons, the United States is the first empire in history that can, if it chooses, take the rest of the world down with it. I mention these few simple truths not to plunge you into despair, but on the contrary, to impress upon you our importance to world history. Imagine how different history would be if we change America. And then imagine what will happen if we do not change America. The reason Bush lies, refuses attacks for his wars, hides the body bags, and avoids the draft, is because he knows that the American people will not sacrifice for imperialist war. And that was the great lesson of the Vietnam War, that our own government sees the American people as a potential threat to the empire. And that is where our opportunity lies. There is no easy walk to freedom. But to paraphrase from Port Huron, if it appears that we seek the unattainable, we do it to avoid the unimaginable. The whole world is counting on us, so stand up and be strong!
And if you're just joining us, that was Phil Warden speaking at a recent peace rally in Augusta marking the second anniversary of the invasion of Iraq. Next, we'll hear some other voices from that day. Some were interviewed and some were speaking at the open mic. Some of them chose to identify themselves while others chose not to. Back now to the peace rally in Augusta on March 19th.
My name is Stephen Carnahan. I am the pastor of the Open House in Portland. It's the United Church of Christ. The first thing I want to say for President Bush and for so many others is that I am a Christian and I oppose this war because I am a Christian. And I want to say that for all those who think that he represents what Christians believe. I don't understand it at all. But here's what I want to say. I was watching the Super Bowl, the halftime show, and there was a commercial that came on that maybe you saw. It showed a group of soldiers coming back apparently from Iraq. Apparently they come back. Walking through an airport, and as they silently walked through the airport, the crowd in the airport began to applaud for them. And I'm watching this commercial, and it was very moving. And I wanted to be one of the people to stand up and applaud for the troops and say thank you for the work that you've done, except I don't believe that. I couldn't do it, and I couldn't understand what it was that I wanted to say to the troops I finally figured it out about a week ago. Maybe I'm not very smart, but I don't want to say thank you to the troops. I want to say I'm sorry. I'm sorry we wasted your lives. I'm sorry we wasted your time. The father of a son who is going to be going to Iraq, he's down in Mississippi training. And I'm not too happy he's going there. He's not too happy he's going there. I've come to believe that President Bush is probably the greatest threat to the United States, to the world, since Adolf Hitler. One of the things that I'm really concerned about is the amount of lying that really goes on amongst our politicians, and we sit and take it. Last week, I brought a letter from my son to Senator Collins' office, specifically at her invitation by letter months before. She was interested in knowing whether our military people were being adequately supplied, equipped, and trained. And he gave her a 5-page letter that specifically said that that was not the case. Along with many other individuals and groups, my wife and I have visited our congressmen's offices. And I'm appalled, frankly, at the response that we get. I have not received an acknowledgement for the delivery of that letter made last week. I'm very, very afraid that our congressmen on both sides of the aisle really are not representing us, and they don't want to talk with us. I think that that's really the matter that's at hand.
My name is Jeff Belcher. I'm from South Bristol. I happen to be a minister, and here on the second anniversary of shock and awe in the war in Iraq, I hold deep, deep agony about what this course of action has done to us and doing to our nation, and what our leadership is deceiving us with. And I just hope we can keep the issue in front of us. I believe the administration has lied to us. I believe their policies are directed against middle class and lower class Americans, that the corporations and the 1% that own 40% of the wealth in the United States are the only ones benefiting from this. And it's going to take citizen uprising to impact it. Thank you.
There was one sign today that I saw that I think was maybe the most eloquent sign here, and it was on the back of a 2-year-old. And the sign said, "Let's just say we're sorry and bring the troops home." I think it expresses what those of us who are really horrified by the immorality of a country believing that the end justifies the means. That getting rid of a dictator justifies the brutal, even though perhaps unwanted, nonetheless brutal killing of 100,000 innocent civilians, men, women, and children. This is what this war is turning our country into, a society that is willing to do immoral, unjust, and really barbaric things, supposedly to achieve a good. I don't want the country doing that in my name. Ann Ferrara, Brooksville, Maine.
I tremble for our nation when I reflect that God is just. Thomas Jefferson.
I guess it's just great that all these people have shown up today. I'm encouraged more and more every year by the new faces. And I think for me, the most important thing is seeing the generations come together. This is something that's been going on for a while, and I think having everyone together is the step that we need to take towards making something happen. My name is Kate Cunningham. I'm from the University of Maine in Farmington.
I really appreciated the woman who spoke about the sadness she feels when she comes. I think that our getting together helps us at least have some truth and reconciliation I too would say to the troops, bless you, I am sorry, not thank you. My name's Meredith, and I've been out here for many years. Thanks.
Great. And then a word, you've been out here many years, a word to people to persevere.
Oh, absolutely. There isn't any choice. What the stakes are our souls and, our children. So, the Iraqi people have suffered so greatly, and that we should be part of that when we have so much to give. That's very sad.
I'm Kathy Mink from Waldo. I was in Tom Allen's office yesterday when we occupied the office. We did not ask permission to go. Tom Allen voted for the $83.1 billion to perpetuate the war and killing. We sat in his office for 4-5 hours and read the names of the dead. We marked up his wall with X's representing the dead. It was by accident, but I mean, the point is that we didn't ask for permission to go there. We want this war stopped, and we're not going to ask for permission anymore to tell the people who are supposed to represent us that we want an end to it. And Tom Allen and all the people who sit in Washington and vote to send our money to kill people, it has to stop.
I'm here in grief for all the soldiers, both sides, that have been killed to date. The soldiers who return home and find it unbearable living, and those aren't even counted. For those whose lives are affected by what this is all about. And I actually am grieving, I just spoke with Steve, that I'm grieving the fact that to me so few people have turned out for this event. That to me I find what's going on an outrage, and everybody should take to the streets, and that many people have not turned out is a bit of a disappointment to me. I hear people, and there's a lot of despondency around about what's going on, about what's not happening, about what's not being said, and I just keep saying, we just keep going. We just keep going no matter what. Sure. My name is Sandy Yakovenko, and I'm from Tenants Harbor.
We have killed the equivalent of 400 World Trade Centers in our illegal occupation. This carnage must stop. The war in Iraq has touched virtually everyone in that country. The residents of Fallujah, somewhere around 400,000 citizens, are now homeless or refugees. What have we done to their infrastructure? Unemployment is at 79%. Their health care systems is in a terrible state. Their economy goes nowhere. Electricity is available perhaps only 2 hours a day. Sanitary conditions are abysmal. Reconstruction is barely moving, yet Bush's friends are making millions on no-bid contracts. The costs for the war in Iraq are way too high and are growing larger every day. We have placed a burden on our country that is not prepared to handle. Our federal deficit is swelling, and its costs will be placed on the shoulders of our children and grandchildren. Those in power now will feel none of its consequences. The tragedy of lost human lives continues to destroy families both here at home and also in Iraq. Where is the threshold when we finally say enough is enough? Our military has paid with over 1,500 deaths and over 27,000 wounded. Every day we are told of the latest casualties from our occupation in Iraq, but there are costs that we don't see. The troops that are wounded or disfigured and are in military hospitals need our support, yet there is very little coverage given to them in our media. When our troops return home, they are faced with a Veterans Administration that is undergoing serious funding problems. TOGUS is facing a $14 million reduction and will be forced to change the way they provide services for Maine's veterans. Wounds suffered from combat are often very severe, resulting in the loss of limbs or shrapnel that too often stays in place for the rest of some soldier's life. Recuperation is slow and painful, requiring a level of compassion and understanding not always available. As we get more returning troops and more wounded veterans, their stories will be heard as they return to their lives in our cities and small towns across the United States. The plight of these returning wounded soldiers would not be so explosive politically if the public had confidence in the rightness of our occupation. But as more and more people come to realize the folly of our war, the foundation of Bush's chicken hawk policy will come under attack. The wounded vets will be seen as victims whose suffering was avoidable. Estimates of Iraqi lives lost hover around 100,000. The editors of The Lancet, a London-based publication, ran a study from a research team from Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. Their findings are chilling. They found that Iraqis were 2.5 times more likely to die in the 17 months following our invasion than in the 14 months prior to it. Before we attacked, the most common cause of death to the Iraqis, sounds like the U.S., were heart attacks, strokes, and chronic disease. Following our invasion, the leading cause was violent death. Most of these deaths were caused by airstrikes, and most of the victims were women and children. The risk of violent death is 58 times higher than before the war started. But shattered lives and families are not the only costs involved in the war in Iraq. There are substantial financial costs as well. The budget for our national defense is the highest it's ever been, at around $500 billion. Multinational companies in the military-industrial complex are basking in newfound contracts and profit. Yet even with all the funds earmarked for defense, the military is running about $1 billion a month short when paying for the basic things needed to fight in Iraq. We all want to support our troops, but they're finding that there are shortages in equipment, armor, training, and spare parts. One reason for this shortfall is that we are funding research on arsenals of the future and neglecting the armies of today. In this current fiscal year, the Pentagon will spend $144 billion on building weapons for future conflict. The Pentagon says it has 77 major weapons programs currently under development. The cost for these new weapons are very high. The Joint Strike Fighter is costing $200 billion. The communications network to coordinate weapons systems comes in at $112 billion, while a new Navy destroyer seems to be a relatively cheap bargain at only $10 billion. When the cost for all 77 of these new programs are totaled, the tab will come in at $1.2 trillion. These costs are double what they're supposed to cost and 11 times what it costs each year to support our military. One must ask how we can have so much money dedicated to these future weapons and not have enough for the armor and bullets needed by our troops in Iraq. A reason is that these future programs are budgeted by the Pentagon and by Congress. Once decided upon, these programs are included in future cost planning. Wars are not put into a budget. They're funded by supplementals or special requests given to Congress as needed. Once these new funds are approved, they are more quickly spent, and then back goes the military for more. The Pentagon has not been able to accurately forecast the cost for their operations in Iraq, and consequently, there is never enough to fully pay for all the operations. As we add more and more troops into Iraq or extend the deployments for those already there, we increase the cost beyond what has been allocated. When we invaded Iraq, President Bush had failed to plan the cost of this war accurately. What happened was that some training was canceled and some equipment maintenance was delayed. These are the things that should be strengthened in times of combat, not weakened. The result is a military that is lacking spare parts and equipment ready for combat, while the Pentagon officials are continuing to increase the profits of military contractors building their weapon systems of the future. It is hard to justify all the high-tech weapons when we seem to be facing an enemy whose main offenses are carried out with assault rifles, rocket-propelled grenades, mortars, and roadside bombs. It is time for the American people to look at where we are spending our tax dollars and where we are adding to our national deficit. It is not right to put the highest priority on weapons whose sole purpose is to kill, and not to place as much importance on educating our young, creating well-paying jobs at home, affording affordable health care, and protecting our environment.
Those were voices for peace recorded in Augusta on March 19th. Last week, we told you that we would be bringing you more coverage of the move in various communities around Maine to ban genetically modified organisms in their towns. We hope to continue this coverage next week as well. Today, we are joined by Brooklyn resident and self-proclaimed concerned consumer, Marilyn Anderson. She was one of the folks who gathered petitions, or one of the petitioners who is striving for a moratorium on GMOs in that town. Welcome, Marilyn.
Oh, thank you, Amy. Nice to be with you.
Thank you. Saturday is when your town will vote, and what exactly will they be voting on?
That's correct. Well, I'll read you what the article on the town warrant. It says, shall the town vote to protect its agriculture and marine economies, environment, and private property from irreversible genetically modified organism contamination by declaring Brooklyn a GM-free zone? And this is not a town ordinance, but a resolution, a declaration of a position that we wish to record. The purpose of this article is we're asking Brooklyn residents to voluntarily protect our town lands and waters by choosing not to cultivate genetically modified organisms. That means GMO plants, trees, fish, and animals in Brooklyn. Because once introduced in the environment, these invasive life forms can never be recalled.
So how did this process come about that you all decided to get this on your presented at your town meeting Saturday?
Well, actually, we saw Percy Schmeiser speak. We've seen him a few times in the Maine area.
He's a Canadian farmer who was sued.
Canadian farmer who was sued by Monsanto, and we just thought we just have to protect ourselves here. And our government, our state government, didn't seem to be protecting us, and we just decided we needed to take action and do it at the most local level, which was town and through the town meeting. And that's what prompted this petition. And as one of our selectmen, George Eaton, recently said, the town warrant, you know, the articles in the town warrant, not because the board was taking a stand for or against the issue, but because it wanted voters to have a say, and is that democracy or not? You know, bringing it right to the town.
So do you know that we just have a few minutes here. Do you have anything that you'd like to say to any of your fellow residents of Brooklyn who may be listening or anyone in any other town who is contemplating doing something like this?
Well, certainly anyone can contact me. But first I want to talk a little bit more about this article. Again, it's not a town ordinance, but a resolution, a declaration of a position we wish to record. And simply stated, this article is about preserving the environment and human health by educating ourselves and resisting the irreversible GMO contamination of life forms. Now, this article will not restrict marketing of GE food because labels identifying GMOs are not required, so we're really unaware of GMO ingredients in foods and products that are on our supermarket shelves. And this article will not restrict businesses from selling or serving GMO products. Those are a few issues, you know, just to clarify it a bit more.
Okay. And how can people contact you if they are interested in more information? Because we are running out of time. So.
Okay. They're welcome to contact me at my home. My number in Brooklyn is 359-4617.
Great. Thank you very much. That's Marilyn Anderson in Brooklyn, and we hope to bring you more about this important issue next week. You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with hosts Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco. Matt Murphy engineered today's program. Andy Buckley does web and technical support. You can reach us here at WERU or by emailing radioactive@maineindymedia.org. Be sure to check out our new website, radioactivenews.org. Thanks for listening and acting. Stay tuned for Hightower and more independent news from your community radio station, WERU.
Radioactive is made possible in part by Artisan Builders, providing environmental design, construction, and renovation for homeowners and local businesses since 1992. 525-7740.